Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And today we are live at the BetMGM Sports Lounge at Bridgestone Arena. And it's starting to fill in
more and more.
The SEC tournament fever is on. LSU and Mississippi State are at the half. LSU leads Mississippi State 29-22. But we'll keep you updated with all of the SEC tournament action all day long. But those Nashville Predators just continue to find ways to pick up points and to pick up wins. And joining us now to break down all of the craziness of the NHL trade deadline is Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast and Sportsnet. Elliot, I'm hoping today is just a little bit lower stress than maybe the last time that we talked on NHL trade deadline day.
I would say, Carolyn, that is definitely true. It's been a lot quieter for me this week. I took kind of a working vacation. And I have to say, the Thursday before the NCAA tournament starts, when all the conference tournaments on, those were one of the days where I never got any work done. Since I grew up in Toronto, I was more of a Big East guy in its heyday, like the Patrick Ewing, Eric Coleman, like Pearl Washington.
Yeah, the days.
But I'm jealous of you guys sitting in your lounge there watching the Southeastern Conference basketball tournament. Brings me back to the days of watching Bob Knight and Eddie Sutton scream at each other.
Oh, weren't those the days? The good old days, one might say. Well, enjoy your working vacation, Elliot. Appreciate you for still joining us on your vacation. It's very, very well deserved. Well, the Predators round out the trade deadline, bringing in Anthony Beauvillier from Chicago, Jason Zucker from Arizona. The Predators trade Yakov Trenin to the Colorado Avalanche and have some swapping of AHL players there as well. What did you make of Barry Trotz's moves at the trade deadline and what that means for this team throughout the rest of the season?
Well, I think a couple of things. First of all, to me, the biggest one was actually the one that didn't happen, and that is Carrier. Because if you look at what Trotz was doing, he didn't want to subtract. Yes, he traded Trenin, and I think it was simply that they didn't think they were going to be able to work out an extension with Trenin, so they moved on. But, you know, he made sure he brought in scoring. The Predators have talked all year long about getting in scoring, and, you know, he brought in Beauvillier, who's a talented guy who it hasn't unfortunately worked out for well lately, but he's a talented guy and Trotz knows him. And to me, the big one was Zucker. He's a really talented guy. And there's no way he should have gone for a sixth-round pick. Like, that's just robbery. And the reason he went for a sixth-round pick is because the Coyotes were not willing to keep money. And so, I think that was a steal of a deal for Nashville, and I bet it went over huge in the room. But the one that really stood out for me was Carrier, because on the morning of the trade deadline, you check in with everyone who needs to be signed, and there's two questions you're asking, okay? Question one is anything going to get done today? If the answer is yes, then you just kind of move on and you wait for it to get done. But if the answer is no, then the question becomes, what next? And does that mean, do you keep the player or do you trade the player? And it was clear in the morning that the Predators weren't sure that they were going to be able to get a deal done with Carrier. But they knew if they subtracted him, then that was really going to hurt them. And so I think the message that Trotz sent was, okay, we may not get this done, but if we subtract this player, we're going to be in trouble because we cannot replace them. It would be very hard to find a guy who can do what Carrier does for you guys. So I thought that was really big that you kept him. I think it probably went over big in the room, and now you've got to work and see if you can get an extension done.
And that's the really difficult balance that Barry Trotz is now tasked with balancing, is the now versus the future. And Barry Trotz has said that, look, I feel like I owe this team the opportunity to stay together and to make a push in the playoffs and to compete in the playoffs. And that is that holding on to Carrier move. That's re-signing the players that they did, whether it be a Tommy Novak or a Dante Fabbro or Michael McCarron, so on and so forth. But also, looking ahead to the future, the moves that didn't get done, Barry Trotz is now going to be talking a lot of contracts over the summer, whether that's extending UC Soros, So now kind of looking past the playoffs and looking ahead to the summer and some of the contracts that did not get done at the trade deadline, what's next for Barry Trotz?
Well, I think you continue to work at things, but, you know, Carolyn, I think at this time of year, you don't want to bother players unless you absolutely have to. I know there's, like, a lot of the really, I don't know if I want to call them old-school thinkers, but, for one thing, I remember Ken Holland, who's the GM in Edmonton, and he's been around a long time. I would text him late in the year saying, you know, anything going on with this extension, anything going on with this extension, and he would kind of jokingly say to me, I don't know how many times I have to tell you, I don't believe in doing extensions right before the playoffs. And I think there are people who feel that way. Now, I think what can happen is Trotz can reach out to the agents and he can talk to them. But generally at this time of year, and it's not always the case, like that's the thing, we're still getting an idea of what Trotz believes as a GM, what his philosophies are. But, you know, generally a lot of teams don't say, look, we're going for the playoffs. This is the most important time of the year. Don't bug the players. Don't get their minds on anything they don't have to worry on. So I think what he'll do is he'll continue to talk to the agents, kind of feel them out. See, like, basically right now, the agent for Carrier and Trotz, they know where each other stands. Like, at the deadline, you get serious. So they kind of know where everybody is, and they kind of figure out what a deal could look like. And also, too, the way he plays between now and then, and the other guys as well, Carolyn, it determines, you know, whether that their asks or their gets change. And I think right now your primary focus is the march to the playoffs and getting there, and everything else is secondary.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman. You can check him out on his 32 Thought podcast. Now, Elliot, looking at what the Nashville Predators were able to do last night versus the Winnipeg Jets, where do you stack this team up? Because they've beaten Winnipeg. They've beaten the Avalanche. You know, you look at, you know, whether it's Minnesota or Columbus, they've sort of matched up well with these teams and have come out on the winning side of it. But where do they sort of match up with these teams moving forward? Because this was the question that we asked Coach Brunette when we had him on earlier. Like, was that a measuring stick type of game for your team to go to Winnipeg and to beat that team?
Well, it is, and it doesn't matter that Mark Scheifele's not playing. Like, that's a big loss for the Jets, but you still got to win the game in a very hostile environment. And, you know, I think this, Derek. I think the Predators, the biggest thing the Predators have changed this year is the way, like, people look at them. And they were kind of meh at the beginning of the year. What did everybody think about them? Meh. They're kind of, who knows what they are. They might be good. They probably won't be good. You know, a lot of people thought, you remember in like that first month of the season, there was one day they were 31st in the league and everybody kind of thought, okay, that's Nashville this year. We don't have to worry about them. Well, you know, now we're seeing they're in the playoff spot. The odds are really good. They're going to make the playoffs. They've played, you know, really hard this year. I don't want to belabor the point because I don't think that story needs to be revisited a ton, but I don't think it's insignificant that after the U2 thing happened, the Predators didn't fold. Like, I've seen teams fold after those kinds of things. And what this says to me is that's a team of real pros. But, you know, the thing, Derek, I really noticed last night was watching Yossi. You know, this the Norris this year, best defenseman, it's going to be hard. Like, there's, you know, Makar is incredible. Quinn Hughes is incredible. But, like, watching Yossi last night, you know, Andrew Burnett asked him to change the way he plays a little bit, less carrying the puck, move the puck. And that pass he made last night on that first goal, like, to me, that is just a reminder of how good he is and how he's probably even better than he gets credit for. Because he's got the skill set to make that pass, and he's changed the way he's played for years, the way he won the Norris Trophy to do what his coach wants and is asking. And, you know, I just think that the Predators this year have created respect. They're much better than we thought they were. And I'll tell you, Derek, that first round of the playoffs in the West, it is going to be brutal. Like, it's a good thing I don't gamble a lot of money, because I lose a lot of money gambling on that one.
Elliot Friedman is with us. Elliot, along those lines, Nashville's not there yet. They've got to keep getting some points here, but you figure if they go 500 or so, their odds are really, really good of getting in there to play somebody. Colorado got a huge win last night in comfort behind fashion.
Yeah.
As you look at these teams now that they've got their new pieces,
yeah,
in the Central specifically, who do you think will come out on top in that division? Because it's going to be a heck of a race for those three teams.
Honestly, I think the deepest team is Dallas. I do. I think top to bottom, 1 to 23, I think they're the deepest team. I know that's not going to make me a really popular guy on Broadway, but, you know, the one thing about Dallas is Ottinger hasn't had a great season, so I think he has to get back to his level. But I think top to bottom, they're the deepest team. But, you know, like Colorado, I like some of the moves they made. They got meaner. I mean, you guys know Trenin, that Duhaime is a tough player too, a hard player. They're deeper on defense a bit with Walker. They gave up Byram. Like, Byram, for me, I understood why they did it, but when they won the Stanley Cup a couple of years ago, he was incredible for them. Middlestat, like, I think they're a deeper team than they were 2 weeks ago. Winnipeg, I mean, they've got the best goalie, and when you've got the best goalie, you're a threat. A big threat, but to me, I would give a slight edge to Dallas, but honestly, Willie, it's the margins are very thin, and in the playoffs, these series, they're going to be brutal. Like, they are just going to be brutal, brutal series.
And with all of these teams,
what time did you get home
about
this morning, Willie?
Well, we gained 2 hours going from Winnipeg to Seattle, so it was... It was 2:30 Central Time when we got into the hotel, but it was only 12:30 Pacific Time. So it was we're still in a weird zone here, trying to adjust.
That's
to what's going on.
Willie. If I couldn't go to the lounge today, I wouldn't show up for work. I got to tell you, like, those guys get Carolyn and Derek get to be in the lounge, and you're sitting in your hotel room. That's a tough draw, man.
That is a little bit of a tough draw, but it's a nice day. It's not raining in Seattle. It's a beautiful day. So that's a good thing. And they don't play until Saturday, so a little time to get adjusted here. I was going to ask you, too, about Andrew Burnett and the job he's doing. He's now 89-43-10 as a head coach. We know the story, and he's admitted it. You know, he was hurt that he did not get retained by the Panthers after what he did that season for them. And then you got this whole saga in New Jersey. They've now moved on from Lindy Ruff, and I know the question's being asked there. Did they let did they let Burnett get away when maybe that was the guy they really needed to think about keeping? But Barry Trotz looks very smart for hiring this guy. But when you just got done talking about the Predators, they're more than the sum of the parts, right? When you look at the names on the page of the lineup, they're playing way above that level. I have to think Andrew Burnett has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, I do. I think Burnett's a really smart guy. Like, when he played, he was a really popular teammate. When he went into coaching, he was a pretty popular guy. He got thrust into a really tough situation in Florida, and I know he was hurt, and I think anybody would. Like, I think sometimes, Willie, and you know, Derek, you really understand this, and I've learned it over the years in covering sports. Like, in sports, you have to have a big ego simply because you are on field competing against, like, a lot of alphas. And it doesn't mean you have to be a jerk or anything like that, but you really have to believe in yourself, and you have to believe you are capable of things in stressful situations. And Andrew Burnett, even though he's a really nice guy, he's like that. He believes in himself. He survived as a pro for a long time, and that doesn't come out it doesn't happen without an immense belief in what you're capable of and what you can do. And look, I think he's proving that here. I really like the Predators. I, you know, because I come on here, I watch them quite a bit. And I like the way they play. I think they're a really interesting team. And, you know, like I said, I think they've handled themselves really professionally this season. And I think it says a lot about the group they've put together and the group that's running.
I'm curious. You get into all of the stuff with all of these moves. And the teams that have really loaded up at the deadline, Vegas, Colorado, Dallas, the teams in the East, they have all jumped in there. And they're being praised for their aggressiveness. And I admire that for sure. But as you mentioned, just because a lot of them are going to play each other in the first round, multiple teams are going to say, we did all this, and then we lost in the first round. And I keep looking at some of these teams that are just depleting all of their assets for the future. Not many prospects, not many draft picks going forward. And I wonder what the feeling will be with some of these teams in another 3 or 4 years on that. Will they get the same praise that they're getting right now for their aggressiveness? Because it's not going to work for everybody.
Well, probably not, because that's the way the world works. We're the ultimate second guessers, right, Willie? But
right.
No, I have a rule. I have a rule. I always make a note of what I say in the moment, and I don't vary from that. I kind of look back and I say, okay, what did I say then? Well, maybe things turned out differently, but I can't change my opinion about how you felt at the time. You know, the thing is, like, for me, the perfect example is Carolina. Carolina had an organizational philosophy. No rentals, no rentals, no rentals. Well, we don't pay for rentals. If it's a mid-round pick, we'll give you, we'll do that. But we're not trading a first-round pick or a good prospect for rentals. Well, you know, last year, they go to the Eastern Conference Final against Florida, and they can't score. They absolutely cannot score. They had, what, 3 goals in 4 games? And they got knocked out, and they had to watch the Panthers, who earned it but were decimated by injury, lose to Vegas. And I guarantee to you the Hurricanes are sitting there saying, we could have given this a better shot. We could have given this a better shot. And so now, this year, they say, you know what, we're going to go for it. We're going to change our philosophy a bit, and we're going to pay a bit more of a price because we've got a good team. And we saw what happened last year. And I really believe, Willie, that the only way that you can be judged is, do you think you have a good team? Yes, then you go for it. Because I'll tell you this. Yeah, you might lose. And Brian Burke always sends me a text. He says, last time I checked, they're still only handing out one Stanley Cup. I know. But look, the Tampa Bay Lightning won 2. They're decimated now. They're starting to slow down a bit. They don't have the assets to make deals, but I don't care. Like, if I was a member of the Lightning or a Lightning fan, I would say it was all worth it. All worth it, because we won 2 cups. And that's the way I always look at it.
I noticed you wrote this in your blog today, and you guys are kicking around ideas. And look, everybody's favorite team, Vegas, this is going to be talked about. With the LTIR maneuvering, they're not the only team that does it. It's within the rules. We all understand that.
Yeah.
I think the question you're bringing up is, will the rules change? Because this is not why they put the rule in, so that you could end up doing what these teams have done successfully and end up with everybody back with sort of a bolstered roster with extra payroll in the playoffs. Do you think in the next CBA they will change that in some degree?
I think, you know what, I think, Willie, I think people get upset in the moment. I'm really curious to see if when it really matters, does anyone really want to change it? Because there's always a lot of noise. Now, I'll say this, you know, someone saw me write that, and they said to me this morning, they said, I guarantee I know what will get it changed. And I said, oh, yeah, what's that? And he goes, if Mark Stone shows up in Game 1, like, it'll be over. and he has a legit injury, like that spleen injury. That's a legit injury. You know, like I said, I've had a couple people throw suggestions at me, things like if you can't play game 82, then you've got to miss a round of the playoffs, or in the playoffs, your dressed roster has to be under the cap. Your non-dressed roster, like it doesn't matter who's not playing, but just your dressed roster is under the cap. So there's ideas there. But that's the one thing I really don't know. Like, there's always outrage and there's always anger. But, like, anyone who could do this would and should. So I always wonder, Willie, is it just noise or is it real that they're going to change it?
Those Vegas Golden Knights just always almost breaking the rules, pushing up against that line, but not quite crossing it. Elliot, really appreciate you for joining us. Enjoy your working vacation, and we'll chat with you soon.
Does Dale Brown still coach LSU, or am I way off on this?
Off on that.
I played against Dale Brown at Memorial Gym in Nashville with Shaquille O'Neal. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Vanderbilt versus LSU. Game tied in the final seconds. They call a foul on Shaq, which was probably not a foul. A little home cooking, maybe. And so Vanderbilt shoots a couple free throws. Dale Brown goes crazy, runs out to half court, and gets tossed from the game. And it's still one of my favorite moments as a college basketball player. That was something. So he was a wacko, but he was really good.
Was that like the Will Perdue, like Barry Gohee days, or is that after that?
I was just after that. I was just after Will Purdue and Barry Gohee.
And that's why they went and got Willie, because they lost Will Purdue.
Exactly.
We got to get another player.
So we need someone to compete with Shaquille O'Neal.
Exactly. We need somebody to guard
Willie
Shaquille O'Neal.
Willie Donick is the guy.
The hack of Shaq D, I was there. I could foul Shaq with the best of them. I had fouls to give.
That's a great story. That's awesome. That's a great story.
All right, Elliot, we appreciate you, and we will enjoy the BetMGM Lounge on your behalf.
Take care, guys.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Really, I mean, LSU home cooking? LSU breaking the rules?
Nah.
Sports?
Oh, no. It
Never.
Was Vanderbilt home cooking. It was Vanderbilt home cooking.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, no. Vanderbilt defeats LSU and Shaq that day, and we shot about 6 free throws at the end of the game because there was the foul on Shaq. He got mad. He got a tech, and then Dale Brown got 2 techs and got thrown out. So I lost track of how many free throws we shot at the end of the game. But it was only like 3 seconds left in the game. And he ended up chasing down a cameraman, I think, for Channel 5. Dale Brown did. And just, you know, he ran into him in the parking garage or something and followed him. And just, it was great TV. Great TV. Dale Brown was great TV.
Never dull. Spicy Dale
Brown. How they didn't go to the Final Four when they had Shaq for 3 years, I'll never really understand.
There are a lot of stories of LSU basketball shortcomings that I truly never will be able to understand. But speaking of LSU basketball, they lead Mississippi State 34-32 with just over 13.5 minutes. I take that back. It is now a tie game. 13.5 to go in the second half. We're live out here at BetMGM Sports Lounge. The SEC tournament is underway. Coming up next, we touched on a lot. Jerry Stackhouse has been relieved of his duties as the head basketball coach at Vanderbilt. Titans sign Calvin Ridley. The Predators get a 4-2 win over the Winnipeg Jets last night. All of that is on the table, and we will get right to your phones on that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We're broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, which today is the BetMGM Sports Lounge out here at Bridgestone Arena. The SEC tournament is in action. Mississippi State takes the lead over LSU 42-36. Just a few minutes left in the second half there in that game. Coming up next is Arkansas taking on 5-seed South Carolina. But I want to get into your thoughts. Everything is on the table. The Predators win last night. What we heard from Elliot Friedman in the last segment. Titans signing Calvin Ridley. It is all on the table. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Scott in Franklin will kick us off here. What's up, Scott?
Hey, I had a question for Willie. And sorry, it's about last Sunday's game. Y'all haven't been talking a whole lot of hockey this week. But Willie, did the coaching staff ever address or ever mention to you or why they didn't challenge that goal? It looked to me just like open and shut goalie interference. I mean, the guy had Saros' leg pinned down until like the moment before the puck was hit in. Was that ever addressed? And did you think it was as clear interference as I did?
You're talking about a goal against the Wild that the Wild scored where it did look like there was a lot of contact there. I didn't ask about that one specifically since then. We didn't do the game, so that it kind of was water under the bridge at that point. But here's what they say a lot in those. They look at it, and if the call on the ice is a goal, if they determine that it's not clear cut, most of the time they're not overturning the call, so the risk of challenging and losing the challenge where the goal counts and the team gets a power play, that has them very hesitant, I think, at times to challenge. And I think there was a little question of whether the player was pushed into Saros and whether by the time the puck was going into the net, well, if Saros had a chance to recover. I think that was very borderline. I think they definitely considered it. But I think with the call on the ice being a goal, they just didn't feel sure enough and early enough in the game where they wanted to, on the road, give up a goal and then give up a power play on the heels of that. That's what the struggle is. But I see what you're seeing there. That was very close. The announcers thought it might be challenged, and I think they definitely considered it.
It is so tough whenever the difference is a hair. You almost have to just defer to what the call on the ice was. And that applies, I think, to every sport. If there's any sort of review whatsoever in football or basketball or hockey, so on and so forth, when the difference is like centimeters, you just defer to what the referees initially saw.
Well, that's what interesting play last night with the high stick. Initially, they come right out and say, no goal, high stick on the Jets. And this is the shutout for Uzi Saros that he's a few minutes away from getting.
Yeah.
So that's a call where you're like, okay, the shutout's still intact. But then they huddle up, and this is what I don't understand, is one of the refs said, no, I don't think it was a high stick, so let's change the call on the ice to a goal, which changes everything. And then they go look at it, and a high stick is very tough to really see definitively with no matter how many camera angles you have. I think it's a flaw in the replay system. It's hard to figure out whether a puck was high sticked. And I know they do the best they can. We need like lasers or something. But they, because the call on the ice was a goal and they switched it, they couldn't overturn it when they looked at it. So I don't think Andrew Brunette liked how that whole shuffle went. When you change the call on the ice before you go review it, to me, that's weird.
That is weird. All right, getting back into some of your texts. Tyler texts in about the question that I posed earlier. Now that the Titans have signed Calvin Ridley, they're bringing back Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Mm-hmm. Does that now give you more flexibility with your second-round pick? I think it does. If you still want to go out and get a receiver, get a receiver. If you want to get a corner, get a corner. But Tyler Texan says, you guys are absolutely nuts. The odds are significantly higher on hitting on a receiver in the second round than in a later round. And conversely, it's easier to hit on a corner in the fourth. You've got to draft tackle in the first, receiver in the second, and then quarter in the fourth. I don't know if there is data to back up that claim. Yeah. I don't know if that's a true statement.
Yeah, if you can give us the data, we can better, you know, forward your argument or, you know, expound on your argument. But
I think past the first two or three rounds, really most positions are just kind of hit or miss. But what I think is absolutely nuts is on March 14th saying, when the draft is in late April, saying you have to do this in the first round, you have to do this in the second round, and you have to do this with your third pick in the fourth round. Things change. Yeah. What if Joe Alt and Olafashinu are off the board at, you know, 5 and 6?
Exactly.
You don't have to go tackle at 7 if your number one targets aren't there at that position. Then you readjust. You let the board fall, and you let it come to you. You don't predetermine.
Yeah, you can't. You, in a perfect world, considering – you know, what they have done, addressing the wide receiver position, you know, addressing the guard position, or let's say the offensive line, but not particularly the left tackle position. But you've addressed some of your needs. So now in the draft, you look at it from a standpoint of, okay, are we in a position to, if it falls our way, to draft our tackle or to draft our receiver? Well, if the draft falls the way you believe it will, then you take your tackle if he's there. If not, then you got to readjust and sort of go with what the board say. You may end up trading down because the two guys that you wanted are not there, whether it's the receiver that you wanted or the tackle that you wanted. Now you got to reevaluate. That's why you can't predetermine. This is what this is what I need. Yeah, these are needs that you have, but what if those needs are taken? Then what do you do as a GM?
Yeah.
I'm sure they have contingency plans in place. But what they have done via free agency does sort of, you know, highlight some other needs that they can address in the draft.
Yeah.
Whether it be receiver, whether it be tackle, or whether it be corner. Again, you're asking me, if it was me, if I had an opportunity to get my tackle, I take them,
yeah,
and then I double back in the second round and I get a corner. But the corner may not be there, and I may be, you know, in a position to move down or draft a receiver.
It does feel like more and more as we go throughout free agency that you're going to have to get your tackle with the seventh overall pick, because if you don't get him with the seventh overall pick, where do you get your left tackle? It's not necessarily a wealth of tackles in free agency. So I think right now we can say that right now it feels like you probably should get your tackle in the first round, but you also have to – you cannot reach – with the seventh overall pick. This pick is so critical and so pivotal for this team. Another texter texts in, says, go ahead, Willie.
Oh, go ahead, guys. Go ahead, good. I had enough of that. I'm with you on the left tackle. Left tackle, I think, is high probability now of being the seventh pick.
It does feel like it. One texter says, D-Mace, could the Titans trade the seventh overall pick to the Bengals for Higgins and the number 18 overall pick, so a pick swap and you get T. Higgins? If so, wide receiver is solid, and you could possibly get two solid offensive linemen and Braden Fisk, the defensive lineman from Florida State in the draft. What are your thoughts?
I think they've addressed the wide receiver position from a veteran standpoint. I don't think they're then – and listen, they may. We don't know. The Titans can do just about anything because they have the space, and maybe they have the, you know, draft – position being in the seventh position to trade back and do a swap with Kansas City. But not Kansas City, but Cincinnati. I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
I think there's a reason why they went out and they paid the money that they paid for Calvin Ridley. So they then wouldn't have to double back and give up picks and then have to pay T. Higgins. They got Calvin Ridley without having to give up any picks. So if you've done that, to me it's counterintuitive to then go and get T. Higgins and give up picks for him, and you have to pay him.
Yeah.
You just paid a guy that you feel is your number one receiver now, and you didn't have to give up anything to get him.
I also think there's no way that the Bengals are going to trade T. Higgins just for a pick swap.
They're
going to want
not.
More than just the seventh overall pick. Mm-hmm. And I think that the need for T. Higgins, or at least the intrigue for T. Higgins, to me, it has plummeted because now you sign Calvin Ridley.
Yeah.
So there's more of a need at the left tackle position, and it's a higher likelihood of hitting on the left tackle position at 7 than you would at 18. Dustin in Hopkinsville, Texan, says, trade Burks for Snead and use the pick to get a receiver. The Chiefs aren't trading L'Jarius Snead for Treylon Burks. Treylon Burks has proven nothing in this league. L'Jarius Snead is an elite cornerback in this league. That's not going to happen. You're going to have to sweeten the pot.
You know what, Willie? I proposed that this morning to TD. He and I were going back and forth. And I proposed that same, you know, sort of scenario, you know, with them getting Calvin Ridley, them having D-Hop. If indeed they wanted L'Darrius Snead, then the only bargaining chip you have, I don't want to see Treylon go anywhere. I want to see him really come into his own here. But because of what they've done in the receiver room, do you then say, hey, listen, Kansas City, we can't give you a number. We can't give you up. We're not giving you our first-round pick, and we're not giving you our second-round pick. But we can, you know, trade Treylon Burks and maybe something else next year for L'Darrius Snead. Will Kansas City go for that? I don't know. Maybe they want more, but at least that puts you in a position to have something to offer. Because right now, if you're not offering a Treylon Burks and a pick, what else do you have to offer? Again, I don't want to see Treylon go anywhere. I want him to stay here and figure it out here. But if the coaching staff don't believe that's the case, then he may be the only guy at this point that you may be willing to part with that's going to help facilitate a trade like that.
I just don't know how attractive of a bargaining chip Treylon Burks is at this point.
Would you rather have him, or would you rather have a third-round pick or a second-round pick? I still think somebody could go in I still think somebody's going to go in with something like that, an attractive package for Snead before it's all over.
All right, the SEC tournament is underway. This has got to be the most fun month of the year to be in Vegas and to get in on some sports bets. So our friend Ali Melnicki from Zen Sports will join us coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Enjoy 102.5 and 106.3 The Game in Guinness for Pinewood Madness. Patio SEC Watch Party tomorrow. 102.5 The Game will be broadcasting live from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., so stop by and enter for your chance to win tickets to see Green Day. Showcase your skills in Pinewood Social's arcade basketball game competition, win tournament tickets, and watch all of the televised games in their jumbo LED screen. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We're live out here at the BetMGM Sports Lounge at Bridgestone Arena. The SEC Tournament Day 2 is in action, where Mississippi State leads LSU 56-52 with just under 5 minutes to go. It's got to be the best sports betting month of the calendar year. And joining us now to give us her best bets of the tournament week is Ali Melnicki, our friend over at Zen Sports. Ali, this game, this Mississippi State-LSU game, has been incredibly physical and back and forth, but Arkansas-South Carolina comes up next. I know Arkansas hasn't had the best season, but they had a great second half against Vanderbilt last night. South Carolina is a 4.5-point favorite. Who do you like in that next matchup in the SEC tournament?
I actually like the Razorbacks to cover. I really like teams that are doing everything they can. This might be their final game. They have a lot of guys that might be playing their final time on the court. So I'm going with the underdogs. I love betting underdogs when it comes to March Madness, especially when that seems like it should be a higher spread. So you got to wonder if there's something that the odds makers knows that we don't.
You know what they say, March is French for hope. That's exactly what this month provides to some of the underdogs.
Right, I'm using that. I'm stealing that
exactly.
One.
Exactly. Yeah,
you, you go ahead. You go ahead. I just came up with that one. Ali, let's look ahead to Sunday. Who are you? Who's your favorite to win it all in the SEC Conference Tournament?
I think it's honestly going to come down between Tennessee and Kentucky. I know I say I like picking underdogs, but I like them to cover, not necessarily win. I think that it's just going to be, whether it's Tennessee versus Kentucky or if Alabama gets there and it's Tennessee versus Alabama, I just think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I would stick with the over before I see the spread. So I think we're in for a lot of points in this tournament.
Ali, how about a team like Auburn in this tournament? What are the odds of them reaching the championship game and not just reaching it, possibly beating, say, a team like Alabama or UT?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. I mean, Auburn is the fourth seed, so they could be in the semifinals against Tennessee. I just think they're not going to be able to keep up with the scoring that Tennessee does, so I'm not looking for them to make a run past the semifinals.
How about the MVP for the tournament?
I mean, you got to go with Dalton Neck, right? He's been the number one guy in Tennessee. I think he's the favorite, so I would put my money on him.
Ali, I apologize. It has to be a quick one this week, but we'll recap all of the conference tournament action next week. We appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate it. Ali Melnicki, our friend over at Zen Sports. That is going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.